views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women, and on this lovely Friday day, I hope it's wonderful where everybody is and where you're listening from. You know, you've heard me talk about Woman of Wisdom. I've been on the show. This is, October 15th is my 6th anniversary for being on Voices of Women. How about that? It's also my birthday. And I always talk about Women of Wisdom. It's a conference that I founded, and we are in our 25th year. We're probably one of the longest-running women spirituality conferences. We've been doing this since 1993, providing a very unique, intimate setting for women to create lasting change in their lives and in the world. And we're asking help to keep it going. You know, what we do here impacts the whole world, because it's that ripple effect. As women heal, it reaches out to other women around the world. So we're just asking people to help out. We've created a crowdfunding campaign for the funds that we need to do this year's conference. And so you can go to womenofwisdom.org and check that out. There's many different levels that you can donate to make Women of Wisdom continuing their legacy. So we appreciate that. And I'm excited today. We're going to be talking about the spiritual practices of Northern tradition. We have the author Evelyn Reisdijk. She's the author of several noted books on shamanism, including Spirit Walking, A Course in Shamanic Power, and A Spirit Walker's Guide to Shamanic Tools. Along with other writings, Evelyn is an impassioned shamanic teacher. She was featured on the Shift Network's 2016 Global Shamanism Summit and is a presenter for the innovative international program A Year of Ceremony. Now, she has a new book called The Norse Shaman, Ancient Practices of the Northern Tradition. So you can get that new book now. And I'm excited to be talking with Evelyn about this, the Norse Shaman. So welcome, Evelyn.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first, how did you get interested in shamanism and become this expert on this topic?
Well, I've been interested in it for several decades at this point, but my entrance into the work was through initially my art and being fascinated by tribal traditions. And then when I hit the wall in an extreme depression and looking for ways to pull myself back out of it, I went and took a program with Michael Honner and actually learned again from him in person. I had learned from his book, but having the opportunity to really journey intensively for a weekend with him, I had the experience of the feeling in my body of the blinders being taken off. The depression tends to narrow you down in all different ways, but I think of it like the blinders on a horse pulling a cart. And the experience of that expanded state of consciousness that happens in journeying gave me that feeling of possibility coming back into my life. And from that point on, I have been hooked in the best sense of the word, and I have followed my curiosity in exploring both here on the earth plane, all different traditions, and exploring in other realms through journeys.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have that in common. I've actually sponsored Michael Harner in Seattle, so I've had done a weekend or maybe even two with him many years back. So interesting, yep. Always to find these connections with people I talk to on the radio. Well, then, so then you wrote the what inspired you to write the Norse Shaman? What's special about the Norse Shaman?
Well, it happened in an evolutionary way for me. I'm Scandinavian in my ancestry, and the studies of shamanism that I've done, besides core shamanism, I've studied with a lot of different tribal shamans from around the world, and it became very clear to me that shamanism really is the spiritual practice of the hunter-gatherer. And if that's the case, it's really universal. And I thought, well, there must be some remnants left from my own ancestry. And doing research that led me down all different rabbit holes, including climate change in the past and the spread of farming into Europe, I realized that hunting and gathering persisted in the northern part of Europe until between 5,000 and 7,000 years ago. So it's really not that long ago. And in the mythology of the Norse, there are threads of shamanic spirituality woven into that that were able to be followed. And so that my experience with it is looking for those threads that made sense and putting together a book that is my own personal exploration and gives other people an opportunity to find their way down the rabbit hole in the same way.
Mm-hmm. And this, so let's talk about the source of this information, because, you know, you're going back that far, there's not necessarily written history. Tell us about how you recovered some of this information.
Well, first of all, I wanted to figure out where, in many ways, our culture kind of went off the rails. Being of Northern European ancestry is both something you can claim lots of wonderful things about our culture, but you also have the burden of the fact that the people of Northern Europe have colonized other places on the planet, subjugated people all over the planet, and created a lot of havoc that we are still struggling with today. That cultural mindset has really become global. And so in unpacking this, I had to find in my own mind where the breakdown began. And I had to go all the way back and do research on how our ancestors, and this is globally, were impacted by the tremendous climate changes that they experienced and the loss particularly of land. Because land that was incredibly fertile in Northern Europe, the part that once connected the British Isles to Scandinavia, was called Doggerland, was some of the finest hunting and gathering area that was available to human beings at that time. And as sea level rose gradually and then finally two enormous glacial lakes let go pretty close in time geologically, that area went under the waves, and that's catastrophic on several levels. If you remove the traditional hunting and gathering pathways for people, it is very disruptive to their lives on an earth plane level around feeding themselves. But it's also disruptive in the way they transmit culture. There's some more recent research that helps us to understand how oral cultures are able to preserve so much information in their songs and in their stories. And one of the methods they use is attaching stories to landscape. So landscape features are those places that sort of trigger a particular set of songs and stories. And so the journey across the landscape provides these mnemonics, these memory guides that help people preserve their culture. So clearly, culture was torn apart at that point. And shortly after that, agriculture came into the area, completely disrupting the natural pathways that people had to survive. So there's this cultural disruption. There's a change in the way people make their living, as it were. You go from being a hunter-gatherer who practices a tradition where they have to be in close relationship with the land to a farming community and a herding community who operate in a different way and in a different relationship to the land. So that clash, I think, helped to contribute to the culture that we have now, and in understanding that and trying to mend some of that tear in our psyche, it's possible for us to look at the times we are in now in a different way. And so that's another thread in my research. So there's, again, this broad topic had to be explored in order to come into a package that would make sense to the reader.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about a lot of the historical findings come from Iceland. There was it was saved more or kept intact more.
The Icelandic sagas were written about 200 to 300 years after the end of the Viking Age. At that point, of course, even Iceland was Christianized. But the stories, even though some of them are distorted and have a more Christian overlay, the threads of the oral stories were preserved in Iceland. So that's some of the threads that were also happening. Those same things were happening all across Scandinavia and Northern Europe, but they got preserved by the writings that were put down in Iceland.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and there's so much history there, and in a beautiful culture. It's and we're going to be talking more about this. I want to when we come back from our commercial break, we'll talk about the role that women played in the shamanic practices, because they were highly revered, and you know, a lot of things that we haven't even thought about before. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and talk more with Evelyn Reisdyke.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
Beyond being this amazing neurologist, inventor, author, Dr. Dan Cohen has been called to look at technology and look at personal and spiritual development and merge these together. As technology uses the healing and psycho-spiritual effects of synchronized sounds, vibrations, electromagnetic fields, and how that interacts with us in our nervous system in what we're calling the Soltech chair.
The Soltech Lounge induces profound levels of relaxation that transition over time into deep meditative states. The synchronized sound, vibration, and magnetic field induce these states. The subject doesn't have to work at it.
To learn more, go to soltechwellbeing.com. That's S-O-L-T-E-C, wellbeing.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Tune in to The Michael Shane Show the third Tuesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and connect with the ascended beings to raise your vibration and manifest the life you desire. Get ready to receive healing through the transphysical mediumship of Reverend Michael Shane and the ascended beings. Visit MichaelShane.com. That's M-Y-C-H-A-E-L, Shane.com, and call 425-971-6632 to schedule your full healing session now.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm talking with Evelyn Reisdyke. She's author of The Norse Shaman. So we were just learning about this this process that Evelyn went through to find these old stories and often written in songs. We were talking about at the break. So let's talk about what the role that women played in these shamanic practices and how you found. I mean, I know there's some burial graves and things that you talk about in your book where they discovered women being buried with ritual objects and things, and there's a lot of information there, too.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we tend to think about Viking culture being very kind of masculine, hairy-chested guys with long beards beating swords on their shields. But women held a very powerful role in Viking culture. First of all, they are the ones that had the keys to the farmstead. Women owned land, and land was passed down on the female line. And that even has some echoes to the role women held in earlier shamanic cultures. They have unearthed many graves at this point of high status burials that contained women's bodies. And they had lots of ritual paraphernalia, high status goods, and they were buried in a way that was clearly different than the average person. And the consistent kind of toolkit they would find included these odd iron staffs, and their staffs about 30 inches long or so. They range a little bit. They're a straight shaft, and at the top end, they're more basket-shaped, and they look like a distaff, that which holds the fiber that you would have as a store as you're using a drop spindle to make yarn or thread. But it's made of iron, so you would never use it as an actual distaff, and in uncovering all these graves, see that this tool is indicating that those particular women were practicing the art of Sather. There is a much longer history than from the Viking time that goes back into the classical period in Europe. It's been written down by Greeks and also Romans, that women practiced the art of weaving magic or spinning magic into thread or yarn. The purpose being that you are weaving in protection, you are weaving in that magic that would also clothe the people that you were spinning the yarn or thread for their clothes. In addition, in the Viking period, you would be spinning the thread that would be woven into cloth that would become sails for ships. So you would have this long tradition of women's magic being used to for purposes of protection through what is a common household task, which is making yarn, making thread. And so these ritual objects are versions of a distaff that are for ceremonial purposes. So rather than the literal spinning of thread or spinning of yarn, you are spinning reality. You are acting in a way like the Norns, who are in the Norse tradition, similar to the Greek Fates, the three Fates. They are the ones that sit at the base of the world tree and are responsible for weaving ordinary reality, the daily life that we have. And so in some ways, you're replicating their action when you are weaving magic in Sather. And Sather is a word that is actually fairly broad, but you can think of it as a shamanic path followed by the people of Northern Europe. Men also practiced this, I should say, but women were the primary practitioners. And that has echoes all across Eurasia, from Europe proper all the way across Siberia and north, even south in Asia to the Himalayas, to Southeast Asia. The original prototypical shaman that is honored in all those cultures is female. So there's this idea that there is a female archetypical shaman that the both female and male shamans honor as their ancestor. And so the fact that that carried through all the way to 1,000 years ago in Scandinavia, I find pretty interesting. The idea that, like shamans' graves in Siberia, like shaman graves all around the world, these women were buried with the tools that they needed to continue their craft even after they died. And the Viking culture had an idea about soul that is different than the way we think about it in our culture. Their idea was that there were three souls, one of which left immediately with the last breath. There was an aspect of the soul that would remain also with the body. And it would stay with the body until the body was either completely decomposed or it was burned and disposed of in that way. And so as long as that body was still present here and on our earth plane, then the conscious soul, which is kind of like the personality that carries all the memories, could be accessed. So that that grave, you think of this honored person in your culture, kind of the spiritual guide for your group, you'd want them to still remain available to you. And so they would be buried with all of their tools, and other practitioners would be able to contact them so they would continue to function as a living ancestor of the tradition. Now, that also has parallels around the world. And in fact, the European Psychological Association did a whole bunch of tests a few years ago using scientific method, and they determined that people that honor their ancestors and work with their ancestral spirits by even just thinking about them before they took intelligence and problem-solving tests did markedly better than any of the other groups, whether they had no preparation or thought about people that cared about them that they were not related to. It always turned out that the ancestral power was actually more effective. So you can see cultures all around the world that honor their ancestors are really quite wise. And so were the people in Scandinavia. They not only honored these women who were practitioners, but they kept them close. They fed them so they would make offerings at the burial mounds so that they would be comfortable in their home and stay as long as possible to assist mm-hmm. them with their work.
Mm-hmm. So that's a practice. Is that the encompasses all their rituals?
The most familiar is probably the oracular tradition, where the practitioner, using the sound of women's voices and some percussion, it might be thumping the staves on the ground or jingling metal rattle, would go into basically a shamanic journey. They would journey down through the roots of the world tree, Yggdrasil, and go into the land where their ancestors lived. So the venerated ancestors who finally left their bodies, because their bodies were gone, and they didn't die in battle. These were typically women who died as older women, well-cared-for older women. They would reside in hell, and that's only one L. It's not the Christian hell. And there, the goddess Hel would look after them in her realm, and so they were available to talk with. So you could go and end this journey being supported by the sound of a women's chorus. So using repetitive sound from people's voices other than drumming and rattling to get into that state where you can connect with an ancestor and then have them speak through you to give wisdom to the group. And that is probably the most well-written about action of these practitioners, and that was preserved quite well in the Icelandic sagas. But truly, it's really, Sather is really about weaving magic. It's about using ritual and the expansion of consciousness to do all the other roles that shamans function in the rest of the world. So getting information for healing, what do we need to make sure that we have enough food? Where, when are the fish coming? You know, are the fish coming up the river so that we can fish for them? All of these different things that are about survival and thriving, and in Viking culture would be how do we defeat the enemy? How do we go raid and make sure that we get what we need? These are earth plane tasks that are assisted through metaphysical means, and that's how shamans function all around the world.
Mm-hmm. I've interviewed somebody before, and I can't remember who, but she also talked about that singing in as you wove, you sang, you know, healing elements or whatever into the cloth. And so I love that you talked about it too, a weaving in protection. And it puts another aspect of, you know, what clothing means to us. Like we just go to the store and buy it, you know, and we do to beautify ourselves. But I did weaving in college, and I love that aspect of that handwork of creating something from yarn and creating something and the energy that you put into that as you're doing it. And so for them, that was a very important aspect in their practice in the ancient days. I think we've lost a little bit of, I think some people are trying to bring back, but it is fascinating. Well, we're going to come back and talk more with Evelyn Reisdijk, and we'll find out more about the Norse shaman.
Would you like to experience life-transforming adventures in personal expansion and world service? If you do, tune in to learn about magical innate abilities that you can develop and use to make your dreams come true. Joy Elaine is author of The Joy Chronicles, and she's inviting you and millions of others to join her in working with galactic masters, angels, and the Ashtar Command, as they assist humanity and planet Earth to achieve their ultimate destination of ascension. For more information about this upcoming event and broadcast, visit joyelaine.com. That's joy, ELAINE.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Are you feeling stagnant or blocked in your love life, career, health, or finances? Experiencing difficulty focusing or setting and achieving goals? Tune in to Spiritual Diagnostics Radio with psychic visionary healers Carol Dorian and Suzanne Evans. Discover the cause and effect of unwanted patterns in life. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit spiritualdeed.com.
Are you anxious, worried, or insecure? Hi, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub. I'm the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Join me for my next breakthrough video seminar, which starts on September 10th. This program has helped thousands of people worldwide to overcome their struggles with anxiety, and I'm certain it can also help you. If you're ready to be free again and have a stronger foundation of inner peace and confidence, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com.
Dr. Bree Gibbs is a fourth generation high priestess with the knowledge to raise your vibration in conscious creation. Offering a wide variety of services from goddess light and shamanic healing seminars to private reading sessions, Bree works with you so you too can stand in your own power. Isn't it about time you took your life into your own hands? For more information about Bree services and products, visit silvergaia.net. That's silver, G-A-I-A.net.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. We are talking about the Norse Shaman with Evelyn Reisdyke. And Evelyn, can you give your contact information, a website where people can go find out about all your books and things?
Sounds good to me. And that's at EvelynReisdyke.com. And I'll spell my last name. It's R, Y like in yellow, S like in Sam, D like in David, Y like in yellow, K, EvelynReisdyke.com.
Okay. Okay, great. And so all of her books are there, and can find out what else you do for, are you doing workshops and things like that?
Absolutely. Workshops, talks, you name it.
Okay, great. Well, one of the things in your book you talk about is a concept of the first shaman. And so I'd love for you to share what that means.
As I said a little bit earlier, that each culture that I have been fortunate to study with, particularly all across Eurasia, they talk about a prototypical first shaman, and they always assign the female gender to that shaman. So in looking at the female body as somehow holding wisdom, I did, again, follow that breadcrumb trail and look at all the images of women that were made by our earliest ancestors in Europe, these little fat grandmas, you know, everybody knows what the Venus of Willendorf looks like, all these clearly not young maidens. These are women who have bodies that have lived long, they've had multiple pregnancies, and for some reason, our ancestors continued to make these objects for 38,000 years continuously. So there's an understanding somehow that this image is important. And in studying Siberian shamanism, there's a tradition of making effigies for the purpose of holding a spirit, so they become containers, and so they are alive. They are images that take on the spirit of whether it be an ancestor, or in this case, I tend to think it's this prototypical older woman who would be in charge of the shamanic tasks of that culture. And so the fact that we held on to making these images for so long tells me that it was critical information. If you think about how information comes and goes in our culture, you can't imagine that something could be held on to for so long, and yet our deep ancestors did. And these figures, like Siberian effigies, were more than likely living ancestors. So they're images that were actually alive to the people that preserved them, and that they held that ancestress energy that they honored in the similar way that they would honor in the much later time of the Vikings, the graves of the women who held power. Imagine this portable talisman that actually holds that first grandmotherly, nurturing, wise woman energy in a hunter-gatherer culture that you could carry with you. So you are taking your elder, your guidance with you wherever you go. And so the fact that we made these images for so long tells me that that image of that older woman who has not only life experience that's visible on her body, but has some kind of magic. And to me, I could see the correlation between that and the cultures that preserved into the 20th century, the idea that the first shaman was female. So I could see that those two things fit together beautifully. And it made sense. Why else would we have made those objects? They weren't fertility symbols because they were the images of women who were beyond their fertile years. They weren't erotica because I'm not sure that most young men would be turned on by those bodies, although, you know, things change. And so that they had some other reason for being. And to me, it had to be a magical reason. These things were precious objects to have remained so long. You know, the musical instruments from 40,000 years ago are largely broken fragments, the flutes and things that were made. But these images were beautifully preserved. They were carried by people. They were rubbed with red ochre, the color of blood, the color that our ancestors used to bury our dead. We would bury our dead and cover them with red ochre, interring them back into the earth's body, like putting them back into the womb. So these objects were precious. And the idea of that a woman beyond her childbearing years would be honored in that way is very different than the way we have the experience of being an older woman in our culture, where many times older women are disposable in the larger sense of our culture. And so another reason to look at this work is to think about, as a woman, where do you fit in your relationship with yourself, in your relationship with your power, in your relationship with nature, for these ancestresses were very much closer to nature than we are. How is it that we can live our fullness? How can we step into that power that has been part of our ancestry for many, many millennia? How do we step back into that in a way that makes sense to us in our world? So is it stepping into shamanic spirituality? Is it stepping into a different relationship with our bodies? Is it stepping into a deeper relationship with nature? All of those questions, I think, are up for us now. And I think programs like yours and others, mm-hmm. that we're beginning this exploration in a way that is more widespread than it was 30, 40 years ago. And I think it's become more urgent, because if that archetype guided us through the tremendous changes that our deep ancestors lived through, the glacial ice would advance and retreat several times, and these people's entire landscapes would change. They'd go from tundra to forest in a person's lifetime, and often back again to tundra in a person's lifetime. So these were tremendous changes. Would mean food sources would change. The course of rivers would change. It becomes cold, and then it's not cold. Rivers become smaller and frozen, and then they're free again. So we are facing this same kind of pressure now. Unfortunately, it's of our own creation this time. And it's like that ancestral first shaman woman is calling to all of us to remember those threads. They held us in very good stead in very hard times in the ancient world. It's still present with us. We can reach for that inside of ourselves, in connection to nature, in connection with shamanic spirituality, in connection with women encouraging one another. And maybe that is the thread that we need to pick up and hold more strongly in our culture now, to bring, mm-hmm. mend that broken thread.
Yeah.
Going back,
well,
to spinning.
Yeah, and I want to say, because a lot of your book, you have a lot of rituals lined out in your book, and so I'm thinking what you're telling people is to get, you know, practice these rituals, engage yourself, and I know you have a step-by-step process, and maybe you could share a little bit about how people can engage in a ritual practice that would bring this about of connecting with the ancient shamans? Or
well, what I can offer is, if you don't already know how to do the shamanic journey, the best place to start is right where our ancestors began, which is sitting in front of a fire. It can be in your fireplace, it can be a campfire, whatever it might be that you can do safely in your home, maybe out on your deck in a little fire pit or a chimenea. And to be still, make time and space to be still in front of that fire. Be thoughtful when you build it. So you may want to sprinkle some cornmeal or something on the base of that hearth before you build that fire. And you're building this fire to be still and allow your ancestors to speak with you. And they will speak through images. They may trigger memories. You may have sensations. You may have feelings. But what you would do is, once you've got the fire going, get yourself comfortable so that you're looking into the flames. And fire flickers at the same rate as shamanic journey drumming. So the flickering of the fire, your mind will begin to entrain to that rhythm, which will give you the ability to move into that visionary state of being. And once in that kind of dreamy place that you get to when you stare at a fire, invite an ancestor who can be a support to you right now in your life. It may be somebody that you remember, a treasured grandparent, or it may be somebody from very long ago. Invite that spirit who is here to assist you in your life to come and share some wisdom with you. It may, again, be a feeling. You may get a whole teaching. You may just have the sense of feeling that companion energy around you, or a feeling of the love that comes with that ancestor. But this is a wonderful first step, and it's a practice you can continue over many nights. It can be something that you do on a regular basis, maybe touching base with your ancestor on a weekend or once a month on a particular phase of the moon, maybe the dark of the moon, when your fire will be a much more vibrant source of illumination.
Yeah, that's great. Excuse me, we're going to have to take a break. So we'll come back in a moment and talk more. We'll have Evelyn continue this fire ritual.
Dr. Bree Gibbs is a fourth-generation high priestess with the knowledge to raise your vibration and conscious creation. Offering a wide variety of services from goddess light and shamanic healing seminars to private reading sessions, Bree works with you so you too can stand in your own power. Isn't it about time you took your life into your own hands? For more information about Bree's services and products, visit silvergaia.net. That's silver, G-A-I-A.net.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman, as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Get into it for 2016.
Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit LynnBrownEvent.com. That's LynnBrownEvent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and we've been learning about the Norse shaman with Evelyn Reisdyke, the author. And so she was just sharing sitting by the fire and having that kind of, you know, and fire, it does have that ritual aspect of that mesmerizing. It kind of, you know, it can put you into that trance, I think. So I think it's a great way to start. But there's lots of other rituals in the book of learning how to connect with various people or things or your ancestors or tons and tons of things. So one of the things, Evelyn, that you devoted a chapter to is a Northern European wilderness quest called Utiseta. I know I have to get my Norwegian accent out there. So let's talk about that, why, what that is and why it's important for people to perform.
Well, Utiseta is the Norse version of a wilderness quest, and it's very different than the Native American quest, because a Native American vision quest is a way to access that altered state of consciousness through deprivation, which is one of the other ways that it's possible to enter the shamanic state of consciousness. But in Utiseta, you would be out on the land, and you would use your singing voice, perhaps chanting also galders or sort of poetic kind of chanting, to enter into that same state of being for the purposes of contacting ancestors, but also to interact with the spirits of nature. The spirits of nature were very much alive to our ancestors. If you think going back to the hunter-gatherers, they had to be in intimate relationship with the world around them, not just with other human beings, but they had to really understand how the natural world worked in order to survive. And there are the visible things in nature, you know, the trees, the plants, the animals, and the birds, but there's also the spiritual aspect of the landscape. And being able to interact with those beings that are not as easily seen with our ordinary eyes was as important to the ancient shaman as interacting with the physical aspects of reality. And so when you enter back into nature, and we are nature-deprived beings in general in our culture. In fact, there's a whole diagnosis for kids that don't play outside. They have nature deficit disorder. We need nature because we are part of nature, even though we have structured our lives in large part to be separate from it. We are nurtured in ways that are profound and very deep. It's nurturing to our body. It's nurturing to our psyche. And we also have the ability to, when altering consciousness outside, to bring in those connections and strengthen them to the natural world. A shaman always borrows power from the place where they are planted on the planet. So a shaman develops relationships with the landscape features, the river, the mountains, the big trees in an area, the great stones that are in an area. And these are forces that you develop a relationship with, and because you are in a good relationship, they allow you to borrow some of their power when you're working. And so in order to practice good relationship, you have to be out with those spirits. And so the formal Utiseta sitting out, is what that word means, is an opportunity to do that and engage your whole physical being. Our culture tends to be quite cerebral, and so we even practice our spirituality up in our heads. And when we take our, our physical bodies and engage them in our work, we dance, we sing, we put ourselves back out in nature, it's a very different experience. It informs us on levels that are not just intellectual, but throughout our entire being.
Oh, that's so true. And I often talk about how it's important to get out. Even in the cities, there's trees and parks to go walk in if you can't get out in beyond cities, you know, in nature. But to access that. So did they do any ritual around these vision quests, the Utisetta?
That's it, Utisetta. It would be, you'd go for a purpose. So your purpose could be to connect. Your purpose could be to go and receive wisdom. So rather than having your entire female chorus to support your stepping into the world of spirit, you would spend time outside. You'd put the cloak around you. You'd put a hood over your head to kind of screen out the ordinary reality aspects that are around you. And then you'd start to do those repetitive chants and repetitive songs that had their roots with the repetitive songs when we were spinning yarn or weaving. Any repetitive task was usually accompanied by some kind of song to make the work light. And those were transformed into spiritual songs. And so you're out there singing until you get into that place where the intangible aspect of the world becomes more tangible to you. You can feel the spirits around you. You can feel the ancestors' presence. And that is an opportunity then to engage with them, to get information, to get guidance, to get healing, to get insight about what's going on in your life. And you might bring an offering out. If you're doing this on a burial mound, you would feed your ancestors. And even if you're out in nature, you'd bring food for nature, because it's always done in reciprocity. And that action of stepping back into being in a reciprocal relationship with nature, a reciprocal relationship with the spirits, is really at the core of shamanic spirituality and something that I think we desperately need at this time.
So true. So what last words do you want to leave our audience?
Well, I would say however you tap into that wisdom that lies beyond your ordinary senses, give yourself permission to do that. It is a healing balm to connect to the larger world that surrounds you. You are never alone. Nature is an ally. The animals and birds are allies, and when we step back into a relationship with them and work with them instead of against them, our lives can change for the better.
Yep, and that's what we're looking for. So thank you so much, Evelyn, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, so everybody check out her book, The Norse Shaman, Ancient Practices of the Northern Tradition. Like I said, there's tons of rituals in here. There's also a ritual how you can create a staff and empower it with... to make it a powerful tool for yourself, and many, many other things. So check out our website, www.evelynrysdyk.com. Well, I'm Chris Danis, the founder of Woman of Wisdom, and again, just a reminder to check out our 25th anniversary conference. It'll be up on our website. The details, all the events will be up by the end of October or before. And right now, you can check out the crowdfunding campaign. We have some gifts and various things that are available when you donate to the conference, and any level is totally welcome. So check everything out at womanofwisdom.org. And please check out my book, Woman of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. It will be next week, as soon as I get it launched. It's all ready to go in Kindle and iBook form. That'll be up for sale next week. Just got to get it up online. And it's an inspiration of the divine feminine, of many, many voices, of women who have participated in the conference, art, poetry, and stories. And so it's a lovely book, a compilation of many, many voices. So thank you for listening today, and I will be back next week. And in a couple weeks, I'll be starting to interview the Woman of Wisdom presenters, who are fabulous women who are coming to Seattle to be at our conference. So have a great weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.